Kehukati, Ashi, Kama, Watch Each Other's Backs. Written by Random Reader 13 and read by K-Burb. This is a Mandalorian Batman crossover fic, rated teen and up audiences, in which no archive warnings apply. It features the relationships between Din and Bruce, Cass and Dick, and everyone and everyone. This is part 3 of Between the Stars. Chapter 1. Bruce and Din stared each other down. Dick looked back and forth between the two of them, resisting the urge to sigh. They were both legendarily stubborn, and that was by Mandalorian standards. They could be here for a while. Bruce shifted slightly, folding his arms tighter, and Din's scowl deepened. Din was probably regretting not accepting sole leadership of their clan. Since he and Bruce were co-leaders, Bruce didn't have to listen to him. Dick wondered if they had any Wasika berries left, and if it'd be worth it to go get some to snack on while he waited for Din and Bruce to finish their silent argument. He had just decided that, yes, this was a good idea, when Cass appeared at his side. She silently offered him the package of berries. Thank you, Dick signed emphatically in Tuscan hand language. Cass's ability to read people really was useful. He popped a few berries in his mouth and chewed obnoxiously loudly. Bruce twitched. Dick ate more berries. Cass took a handful and chewed loudly too. Din's jaw tightened. There were a few important things to know about Bruce and Din. They were both very stubborn people, they had both adopted very stubborn children, and they both couldn't stand loud chewing. The standoff continued. Finally, over 5 minutes later, Din broke. Fine, he snapped, throwing his hands in the air. You can come, but the Ade stay on the ship. Bruce looked incredibly smug. He'd insisted on coming on Din's next sorcery hunting mission after Din barely survived the last one. The missing ships had turned out not to be caused by JT magic, but by a massive creature that Din said it looked like a cousin of a Krayt dragon. It nearly swallowed Din's shuttle whole. It was sheer skill, stupidly good luck, and maybe some magic from Grogu that let Din limp back to the Dark Star, ship barely managing to stutter into the hold before the engines gave out. So Bruce had plenty of reasons to stick to his guns in this argument. Really, Din never stood a chance. Dick reached for another handful of berries. Bruce turned neatly on his heel and plucked the package from his hand. He tossed a berry into his mouth. Prepare for hyperspace, he said cheerily. Ladive was a small backwater planet primarily made of jungles. It didn't look like it held a base for sorcerers, but from Din's stories, Dick knew that seeing wasn't always believing. Hopefully he'd get to see something, though. This was the first time Din was even letting them in the same sector as his sorcery searching. Right, Bruce said, double-checking his armor and weapons. He locked eyes with Dick. You all stay on the ship. Dick resisted the urge to roll his eyes. That'd just tip Bruce off. If we don't check in 2 hours, or if you ever think you're in danger, you leave us here and fall back out of the atmosphere, Bruce continued. Understood? Understood, Dick said, nodding. Understanding was not the same thing as obeying. He's been on desert planets, water planets, city planets, and an entire planet of swamp, but he's never been to a jungle planet. Even if there wasn't cool JT magic stuff, he'd still want to explore. With the JT magic? There was no way he was missing this. It was safe enough that Din was taking the baby for Kriff's sake. And yes, Dick was aware that Din had to bring Grogu to activate any JT magic that might be lying around, but still. Bruce clapped him on the shoulder. Good. Take care of your siblings.
Dank Ferrik.
Dick hated being the oldest. It meant he had to be the responsible one who made sure no one snuck out, rather than the one doing the sneaking. And Bruce knew that. If the glint in his eyes said anything. Smug Basom. Right, Dick said, trying to drum up some false enthusiasm. Yay, ship. Bruce rolled his eyes and put his boucher on. He and Din walked down the exit ramp, blasters at the ready. Grogu was tucked into his Buir's makeshift beery cad. He waved at Dick. Dick waved back and forlornly shut the ramp. He turned around to find Jason, Cass, and Damien hovering behind him eagerly. Sorry, guys, he said. We gotta stay on the ship. Cass narrowed her eyes at him. Damien looked disappointed. Jason scowled. He pulled the take care of your vodikase card, didn't he? He asked. Dick sighed. Yes, so I'd appreciate it if I didn't have to track any of you. He trailed off. Where's Tim and Steph? They all stared at each other for a second. Dick swore and bolted for the hold, his siblings' boots pounding behind him. Tim was halfway out of the maintenance hatch. Dick lunged forward and grabbed his ankles, hauling him back into the ship. Tim yelped but quickly stowed his blaster, years of safety training kicking in and keeping him from shooting Dick. What are you doing? Dick demanded.
Going to explore the planet,
Steph said, unabashed.
Like we all want to.
If we all want to go, then why were you sneaking out?
Because Bruce was obviously going to pull the take care of your vodikase card, and Dick was obviously going to cave like Blastoid under a blaster bolt.
Oi, Dick protested. Tim folded his arms.
Am I wrong?
Dick paused, looking around at his siblings. He sighed. No. Tim made a noise of triumph. But, Dick hurried to add, that doesn't mean you get to sneak out. This planet could be dangerous.
That's why we're fully armored and going together,
Steph pointed out.
Hey, and if we sneak out, you'd have to follow us,
Tim added, tilting his head to the side to convey a smirk. That was a good point, and Dick did want to explore. No, this was a bad idea, unless... Well, wait a bit, he decided. Make sure Bruce and Din don't come racing back immediately because there's, like, JT monsters.
Luring you into a false sense of security,
Steph agreed, nodding wisely. Dick grinned. Exactly.
Think they'll stay on the ship?
Din asked, holding his Ambin rifle at the ready.
They'd better,
Bruce grumbled, peering around a tree and gesturing them forward.
Or they'll be cleaning the vac tubes.
Din snorted.
Yeah, because that's worked as a deterrent in the past.
Bruce sighed.
I need to come up with new punishments. Preferably ones that don't drive us insane along with them.
Din said, examining a chunk of stone debris sitting among the ferns. Bruce had tried grounding Steph from jobs once. She'd retaliated by singing the most bawdy, obnoxious song she knew at all hours. Din had given up on covering Grogu's ears somewhere around hour 3 and just prayed the kid was too young to pick up on any of it.
You have raised several vindictive little shits,
he told Bruce.
They get it from you,
Bruce shot back.
How?
He was not taking responsibility for this. They were Bruce's Ade. He wasn't even around enough to be responsible.
You're the cool Babudu who showed up once every few months with stories about bounty hunting,
Bruce said, carefully shifting another piece of debris to peer around it.
They all idolize you, and you're a vindictive little shit.
He made a gesture as if to say, and that's how we got here. Din refused to be distracted by the backhanded flattery. Yeah, he loved being the cool Babadoo that the Ade liked following around, especially since Grogu wasn't nearly as impressed, but that did not mean Bruce was right.
I reject that. Like you rejected my suggestion to learn sword work? For the Manda's sake. No, Bruce, don't be silly,
Bruce said, raising the pitch of his voice to mimic a much younger Din.
I'll never need a sword. Why would I waste my time learning how to use one when I could be practicing with my blaster and staff?
He let his voice return to its normal timbre and jerked his chin at Din's belt where the darksaber rested.
And now look at you. Those sword lessons sound pretty good now, huh? I can't believe you're calling me the vindictive one here. I'm also very skilled at hypocrisy,
Bruce said, deadpan. Din snickered despite himself. Hurrah, when was the last time he'd snickered? Not very Bear Oya of him, but then again, Bruce had always seen him as his Vod first, try Bear Oya second. Bruce's helmet tilted in a smile. They broke through the trees. A ruined building sat before them, tall stones scattered in all directions. A single damaged spire remained standing in the middle of the rubble, but it didn't look very sturdy. Bruce whistled quietly, the sound coming out distorted through his vocoder.
I'm not sure anything survived.
Din hummed noncommittally.
There are usually tunnels,
he said. They walked into the ruins together. Din put away his rifle in favor of his blaster into the closer quarters. They did an initial sweep of the area, confirming that no one else was around. It looked like this place hadn't been touched since it was destroyed, no footprints disturbing the dust. When Bruce signaled the all clear, Din pulled Grogu from the bag on his hip and settled him in his arms.
Do you feel anything, JT?
He asked quietly. Grogu cooed, ears twitching. Din hummed.
I see.
He did not see, but Bruce said talking to Ade like you could understand them was important for encouraging communication. Din turned and raised his arm, flicking two fingers toward the standing part of the building. Bruce nodded and headed around the rubble, doing a final sweep on that side before meeting Din at the entrance to the spire. There was a brief stare-off as they silently debated who would go first. Bruce was the logical decision, since he wasn't carrying a baby, but Din had explained why he took Grogu with him in these JT places in the first place. Apparently, the magic could sense JT, and it could get pissy if you weren't one. They finally stepped in together, Bruce just a smidge in the front so he could block Grogu if necessary. The building was quiet and still. They waited a long moment, but nothing changed. Cautiously, Din took the lead, stepping further inside.
It's quiet,
Bruce said through their private comms. Din understood the decision. The air felt heavy and thick, like it shouldn't be disturbed by something so banal as voices. Even Grogu was quiet, and Din glanced down at him. His big eyes stared over the top of his bag, his ears lying flat. Be careful, Din said, sealing his voice off from the air, too. Grogu doesn't like this. They headed deeper into the JT Temple. Oh, no, Dick said. What a terrible Ade running away into the jungle. I simply must go after them, Jessica, as a responsible Aura Vod. Jason gave him an unimpressed look. Booyer isn't here. You don't need to do the whole act, he pointed out, shouldering the Amban rifle. They only had two, and one of those was Din's, so they all shared the other one. Well, for a given definition of shared. Jason had called dibs and then punted Tim across the room when the younger boy tried to sneak past him and snatch it off the wall first. Dick sent him a truly tragic expression. Jason sighed. Oh no, he said, voice flat. Whatever shall we do? I must accompany you into the jungle in case of danger. Dick smirked. Damn right. He hit the controls for the exit ramp. The heat was the first thing to hit them, and Dick immediately started sweating under his armor.
Okay,
he mused.
They should be over there.
The trees folded over them as they moved away from the ship, and Dick double-checked that he had the coordinates programmed correctly into his vambrace. They didn't want to get lost out here. Bruce would absolutely murder them, for one. For another, something was prickling at the back of his neck, like a spider had been dropped down his cuirass, and it made him want to shiver.
Hey, does something feel off to you?
He asked Jason quietly. Jason paused, tilting his head a little.
No more than any unfamiliar planet,
he said.
Why?
Dick shrugged.
Just a weird feeling.
Jason hummed and activated their internal comms.
Everyone take note. Dick has a weird feeling.
The words could easily have been sarcastic, but Jason's tone was genuine. Dick and Cass had the best instincts in the family. If one of them thought something was off, that was enough for a check-in. If both of them thought something was off, that called for immediate reevaluation of their plans and situation. Are you feeling anything weird, Cass? Dick asked. Cass clicked her tongue twice for no. Jason glanced at Dick.
What do you want to do?
Dick hesitated. He usually trusted his instincts, but Cass didn't feel anything. It was probably just paranoia from hearing all of Din's crazy JT magic stories and being the one in charge right now. Proceed with caution, he decided.
Roger that,
Tim said.
We're waiting for you just ahead and to the left.
Dick stayed on guard as they wandered through the trees, but he was gradually distracted from the feeling as his siblings ran around and explored.
Do you think this is safe to eat?
Jason mused, eyeing the pink fruit he had just pulled off a tree.
I could test it back at the ship. We haven't had fresh produce for a while. Wimp, take a bite right now,
Steph called jokingly. She was crouched over by a big bush, holding some of the broad, flat leaves so Damien could peer underneath them. Damien sniffed and sat back on his haunches.
I have discovered a footprint of some creature. What kind of creature?
Steph said, kneeling down to stick her own head in the bush.
Small,
Damien said, holding his hand a foot or so off the ground.
Probably carnivorous or omnivorous, given its claws. But that is not the strange thing.
Dick looked over, on high alert again.
What's strange? I see what you mean,
Steph said at the same time.
Sending image.
The picture appeared on Dick's visor and he opened it. There was indeed a small footprint in the dirt.
What am I looking at, Damica?
He asked.
The ground is hard,
Damien said, folding his arms.
It should be soft. We are on a jungle planet. The print looks like it has been there for a long while. It should have been washed away by the rains or otherwise disturbed. It feels almost like stone,
Steph said as she popped back out of the bush. She stamped her foot on the ground a few times.
Out here, too. There's no leaf litter,
Tim said suddenly.
I hadn't noticed before.
Cass snapped her fingers a few times and they all turned to look at her. No animals, she signed. Tim tilted his head in a confused frown.
But they just found an animal print.
Long time. Not now. No birds, no bugs. Dick looked around the jungle with new eyes. She was right. He hadn't heard a single bird or bug since they arrived. The whole jungle stood silent, bristling with plant life, but at the same time, feeling dead in the silence.
I think we should go back to the ship,
he said. None of his siblings argued. They hurried back to the ship in a tight cluster, pauldrons bumping against each other and heads on a swivel. Dick didn't relax until he sealed the exit ramp behind them.
That was weird,
Jason said.
Jungle planet, but no leaf litter or creatures. Hard dirt, and I didn't spot any puddles or water on the way back here. Betcha if I took off my boucher, it wouldn't be humid either. It could just be that they're due for rainfall, but with the ground as hard as it is, the plants shouldn't be as green.
He held up the pink fruit he had picked.
I'm gonna go cut this up and run some tests. Decom sonic first,
Dick said.
We don't know if there's anything out there that's dangerous.
One by one, they went through the decontamination sonic, cleaning their armor of any foreign substances. Jason put the fruit in a sealed box before his turn and headed for the hold. One of the upgrades Din had gotten the Dark Star with the reward money from Moff Gideon was an analyzer. It sat by the door to the hold, and it scanned whatever you put inside for toxicity or otherwise dangerous substances for a wide variety of species. "You can't trust everything you see in a market," he'd explained as Dick helped him install it. "What's good food for one species could be deadly for you, and what's just a rock for someone else could have deadly radiation for humanoids. This," he'd slap the top of the machine, "will warn you if there's anything dangerous." They all crowded around the machine as Jason carefully placed the fruit inside. Dick leaned his elbows on Tim's shoulders to see better, and the younger boy didn't even elbow him, too busy craning his neck to see the readout. Jason frowned at the readout. "This doesn't make any sense," he muttered. "What?" Steph demanded. Cass clambered onto Steph's back to see better. Steph automatically grabbed Cass's legs and adjusted her stance for the extra weight. "What's weird?" "The fruit doesn't have any liquid in it," Jason muttered. There was a moment of silence. "Huh?" Dick demanded. "Look," Jason tapped the readout. "It's not registering any liquid at all. This thing should be a dried out husk." "So why isn't it?" Tim asked. "I don't carking know. Do I look like a botanist?" Damien cleared his throat. "That's impossible," Dick muttered. "Unless maybe it doesn't need water. Is that possible?" "It is a weird JT planet," Tim offered. "Hey," Damien interjected. Cass snapped her fingers a few times and signed, "Cut it. See if it has juice." Well, technically, she said, "See if it bleeds," but they all knew what she meant. Tuscan hand language didn't always have specific words for everything. Instead, they just switched out another, usually violent words that made sense in context. Sort of like Mandoa, actually. No wonder Din got along so well with them. Jason grunted in assent and pulled out a knife. "Hey!" Damien yelled. They all turned to look at him. He had elbowed his way to the front of the group and scowled up at them all from his place by the scanner. "It's shriveling, which you would have noticed if you weren't too busy jabbering." "What?" Everyone yelled. They all crammed closer. Damien yelled angrily as he got squished against the scanner. Dick got a knee to the ribs as Steph abandoned Cass in favor of getting closer, and Cass decided he was the next best person to climb. "Okay, back up," Jason snapped, shoving the lot of them away. Dick staggered back, barely managing to keep his balance as Cass clung to his head. "Vor Entia," Jason said pointedly, turning to open the scanner. He pulled out a handful of dust. They all stared at each other. "Oh, I don't like that," Steph muttered. "I don't like that at all." Cass clicked her tongue in agreement. There was nothing to see in the standing remains of the temple. Din was mostly relieved. He didn't like the silence of this place. He wasn't sure any JT magic that lived here would be particularly nice. And he wasn't sure he really wanted to complete his quest anyway. He was getting more used to the idea of keeping Grogu as a permanent member of his clan, of raising the odd with the help of his Vaad and Vaadi Kase. The not JT said Grogu's attachment to him was dangerous, but Din didn't see how. If he raised Grogu as a Mandalorian, he would learn to turn any anger or pain into protectiveness for the good of the elite. Mandalorian's attachments gave them strength. Drashia Tomei. Wouldn't the JT teach Grogu to isolate himself? Din had been alone for a long time, as the tribe's Baroya, and he wouldn't wish that on anyone. Anyway, he wasn't upset about the lack of JT magic. There had been one moment when he thought something was about to happen, when Grogu perked up and cooed in the highest room in the spire, smiling and batting his hands on the bag, but nothing had happened. He and Roos had swept the room 3 times, but nothing glowed or moved and the roof didn't fall in on them. Maybe Grogu just felt like making some noise to break the tense silence. Maybe he was hungry.
"Is that it, Adika?"
he asked softly.
"Are you hungry? We'll get you some nice wasaka berries back on the ship, if your vode haven't eaten them all. I wouldn't be hopeful,
Bruce said, leading the way out of the temple, blaster at the ready.
They get snacky when they're bored. Is that where all my rishkates went?
Din asked, mostly amused.
I thought they ran out too fast. Probably.
Bruce agreed, voice carefully neutral. Din sent him a suspicious look. Bruce stared straight ahead, visor giving nothing away.
You basem, it was you, wasn't it?
He exclaimed.
And you were going to blame your Ade. I have no idea what you're talking about,
Bruce said easily.
Bantha shit. You're buying me more next time we go to Corellia. Of course. As their Buir, it's my job to handle my Ade's transgressions. You're a Shabuir,
Din informed his Vod seriously.
I thought I was vindictive. You're a lot of things,
Din laughed. It was like a weight had fallen off his shoulders, now that he knew he didn't have to deal with sorcery or monsters or a JT who would agree to train Grogu. He jostled Bruce as they entered the tree line and got jostled right back. The jocular mood vanished as they arrived at the clearing where the ship should have been. Should have been, because there was no ship and no sign of disturbance. Din checked his comm records automatically, wondering if he had somehow missed a call from his elite. He hadn't.
Something must have spooked them,
Bruce said, voice tense.
I'll call.
He tapped his vambrace, adjusting his comm frequency. Din waited, eyeing the surrounding trees.
They're not picking up,
Bruce said after a long moment. Din clenched his jaw. This was bad.
Maybe they're in hyperspace,
he suggested.
Maybe whatever spooked them was bad enough for a jump.
That wasn't as reassuring as he'd intended it to be. It took a lot to scare Bruce's Ade, and until they replied, they had no way of knowing what happened or if everyone was okay. Din wanted to reassure Bruce, but he knew how empty reassurances rang in the face of losing your children. He settled for resting a hand on Bruce's shoulder, above the pauldron, and giving a firm squeeze.
I'm here,
the gesture said.
You're not alone.
Though it occurred to him, somewhat belatedly, that if something had managed to scare off Bruce's Ade, then he, Bruce, and Grogu were probably in more immediate danger.
I'm going to do a lap,
he murmured.
Try and see what may have caused this.
Bruce nodded stiffly, typing on his vambrace. After a moment's consideration, Din lifted Grogu's bag off his shoulder and pushed it into his Vod's startled hands.
Keep an eye on him,
he said, turning and jogging a short distance away so Bruce couldn't hand the odd back. Grogu had a calming effect on people, most of the time, though when he really got into a mood, everyone got into a mood. Din himself had plenty of experience with the instant comfort of hugging Grogu, and Bruce needed some of that right now. Not to mention, watching Grogu would give Bruce a sense of purpose. Mandalorians didn't do well without a purpose, and one whose Ade might be in danger did even worse. So yes, Din was happy to hand Grogu over for many reasons, but that didn't mean there wasn't a part of him that tensed at the loss of the odd's weight, that wanted to hold his kid close until he was sure the threat was gone. He crouched and flipped through the settings on his visor. There weren't any recent tracks, no hints of heat signatures left in the area. They must have left quickly after Din and Bruce entered the temple. There should have been some indication from the ship's engines otherwise. No disturbances to point to an animal or a ship. Din paused. Actually, there was no indication that any ship had been there. Din quickly walked to a spot he knew a landing gear had been. It was just across from that tree with the vibrant yellow leaves and red flowers, and at a 30-degree angle with the bush with the large flat leaves. The plant should have been crushed, there should have been indentations into the dirt, and here, where the thrusters were, there should have been scorch marks. The plants grew green and lush, uncrushed and unburnt, as if no ship had been there at all. Din swallowed.
What have you found?
Bruce asked, suddenly by his side. Grogu was clasped tightly in his arms, sitting quietly and gently patting Bruce's vambrace. Din looked up at him, at a loss.
What have you found?
Bruce repeated, voice sharpening. Din slowly stood up from where he'd been kneeling to inspect the plants.
Nothing,
he said hoarsely.
Bruce, it's like the ship was never here.
Bruce's grip on Grogu tightened as Din pointed out his observations until the odds squeaked. Bruce quickly loosened his grip and stroked Grogu's ears apologetically.
What could this mean?
He asked slowly, not looking up from the odd.
Of course the ship was here. We're here, after all. We couldn't have spent enough time and...
He froze. Their visors met, matching horror through their veins.
How long were we in that temple, Din?
Bruce asked shakily. Din pulled up his van brace controls to check the time and, please, Kara, no, the date. The chronometer blinked blankly at him, an empty string of zeros flashing across his visor.
My chrono's not working,
he said. He caught Grogu as Bruce shoved the odd at him to check his own chrono. Anyone else would have gotten a blaster bolt to the face for the rough handling, but this was his VOD, and he was panicking over losing his own Ade. So Din just adjusted Grogu to a comfortable position and watched Bruce in concern. He must have gotten the same response on his chrono, because Bruce let out a violent string of curses, spinning around and kicking the ground, fists clenched at his sides. Bruce didn't curse often, trying to set a good example for his Ade, a losing battle, if you asked Din, and Din flinched a little, hearing it.
Come in, Darkstar,
Bruce said.
Darkstar, this is Darpan. What is your location? Dang, Ferrick.
Bruce,
Din said cautiously. He edged forward, turning his body a little to protect Grogu. He didn't think Bruce would consciously hurt the odd, but Din had unintentionally attacked allies while in a compromised emotional state himself, and he wasn't about to take the risk.
Bruce, Vod, we'll find them.
Bruce took a deep breath that rasped through his vocoder.
Of course,
he said, voice going flat and expressionless, as impenetrable as his Beskar Gom. Din's heart ached. He'd listened to that voice every day for years after the Night of a Thousand Tears, when Bruce painted his armor in gray and submerged himself in his grief. It had disappeared bit by bit as he adopted his Ade, splashes of color gradually overtaking the gray, bringing back the funny, gentle man that hid underneath. Din didn't like hearing it again.
We need to scout the planet,
Bruce said, tapping on his vambrace and looking around.
We need to find a way off planet. We need to know if we're missing time or if the chronos are just broken, and to do that, we need to find people. Right,
Din said, not knowing what else to do. Bruce nodded and strode away. Din stared after him for a long moment. He was used to being the person being helped when his kid was missing, not the one doing the helping. He felt terribly hypocritical, standing there with Grogu safely in his arms, while his Vada Kasse had disappeared somewhere among the stars. But he'd figure it out, for his Vod and his elite.
We'll find them,
he repeated, and it was a vow to the Kara themselves. Chapter 2. Cass held her baton tightly, stalking silently over the jungle ground. It should have been harder to keep quiet. She should have needed to dodge sticks and leaves and fallen fruit, but there was none of that here. Cass could have kicked herself for not noticing the danger in the missing litter. None of her siblings had gotten hurt, but Bruce, Din, and Grogu were missing. Dick walked beside her, swinging his blaster this way and that, checking for danger. His body hummed high pitch and rapid in agitation, ready to leap into action at any moment. His hum was usually smoother, reverberating in a way that felt right, even more than the other members of her family, but it had grown sharper as time passed without Bruce and Din and Grogu coming back from the temple ruins. When Jason informed them that 2 hours had passed since they left, Dick didn't even glance at the cockpit, instead heading directly for the door. Take off once we're gone, he'd ordered Jason, voice hard. I'm serious. We'll keep our comms open, but I want you off this planet. Jason didn't take orders well, and especially not when they came from one of his siblings, and Cass had half expected his hum to get louder and more aggressive, for him to puff up and step into Dick's space to argue. But Dick had just squared his stance and glared, and Jason's hum had quieted before he'd given a grudging nod.
At the tree line,
Dick reported, pausing for a moment to scan the more open area leading up to the temple ruins. Cass watched him carefully, listening to the anxiety vibrating below his determination. She should have been paying more attention to the environment before, but she learned from her mistakes. If Dick noticed something, she'd notice it too.
We should be down there helping you guys,
Steph muttered. Cass couldn't feel her from this far away, but she knew what Steph felt like when she was annoyed and afraid.
For once we are in agreement,
Damien said.
This is preposterous, and I demand that we return to the planet at once.
The sharp agitation in Dick's hum grew louder, and she could see it mirrored in his stiff muscles as he pointed his blaster at a new quadrant.
Nejo ha,
Jason snapped.
They don't have time to watch you brats while they're trying to stage a rescue.
Steph and Damien erupted into arguments. Cass scowled. They were making it difficult to concentrate. Even when she couldn't feel them, they were loud. She tried clicking her tongue a few times to tell them to knock it off, but they either didn't hear her or ignored her.
Gev,
Dick barked. The line went silent.
We are on a mission,
he bit out.
We need to focus.
Steph murmured an apology, and after a moment, Damien did as well. The agitation in Dick's hum eased just a little, and he nodded, staring intently at a bush.
Exiting the tree line.
They didn't encounter any threats. Cass stretched her senses as far as she could, listening for any unfamiliar hums, but there was nothing but the faint vibration of plants. No sign of the rest of their elite. Hopefully they were just too far away to feel. Feel anything? She asked quietly. Dick huffed.
Nothing new,
he said tightly.
Just a general sense of unease.
Cass hummed and flicked her finger toward the temple. Dick nodded and followed. The temple was strange. It didn't hum, only living things did, but it felt close, like the building was almost humming. Like a smell she could almost recognize. She didn't like it.
Building feels weird,
she said, darting around another corner.
I know what you mean,
Dick said, voice tight.
Something's not right with this temple. JT Magic?
Tim suggested.
Cass, didn't you say Grogu hums differently than everyone else? Does it feel like that?
Cass tilted her head thoughtfully, remembering the way Grogu closed his eyes and reached out his hand, the way his hum grew louder and stronger. Maybe, she said. Building not alive. Shouldn't feel. Don't really. Almost. She huffed, frustrated that she could not describe the feeling.
Yeah,
Dick said, rejoining her in the stairway as they cleared another level. The remaining part of the temple led upward in a spiral staircase with levels of doors. So far, all the doors led to bedrooms or schoolrooms or storage rooms. Normally, Cass would look around to find anything valuable or useful, but she didn't want to take anything from this place.
This place feels more alive than other places, which is probably why you're feeling it at all. It's...
He shivered a little.
Very strong.
Cass was glad she didn't have to feel the building very strong, but she didn't like not knowing what her brother was experiencing either.
Final level,
Dick reported as they reached the top of the stairs. There was only a trapdoor above their heads set into the stone.
We haven't seen any sign of any life forms. Hoppy,
Jason said, voice strained. Cass squinted at some carvings on the wall. She couldn't read the strange squiggles. Dick's hum abruptly changed, and Cass whipped around. Her brother's posture wasn't rigid and worried anymore. Instead, it was relaxed and happy. The sharp agitation had disappeared from his hum, and it was settling down to its normal state. Dick? She asked.
It's okay, Cass,
he said, reaching for the trap door.
I think our answers are in this room.
Cass looked upward. She couldn't feel Bruce or Din or Grogu above them. Before she could protest, Dick pushed open the trap door. Cass shoved past him, kicking off the wall and planting a boot on his shoulder for extra height, electrifying her batons as she leapt into the room, landing in a ready stance. The room was empty. It was only a few steps wide in every direction, with smooth, curved walls and windows in all four directions. The roof ended in a cone point high above them. Dick climbed into the room behind her.
"Huh,"
he said, kicking the trapdoor shut. The feeling at the edge of Cass's brain, the almost but not alive feeling, disappeared. She stiffened, but Dick reeled, leaning a hand against the curved wall for balance. His hum jolted in surprise and shot higher in agitation before dipping in nausea.
"Oh, crap,"
he moaned, pressing his other hand to his boucher.
"What the cark was that?"
"What?" Cass demanded.
"It just stopped. It's like the whole place just changed but didn't actually change. Like it shifted 3 inches to the left, but you can't see it, you just feel it."
Dick fumbled.
"I think I'm gonna throw up."
He yanked off his boucher and doubled over, taking deep breaths through his nose. Thankfully, he didn't actually throw up. And after a few minutes, his hum calmed down enough that he stood up and put his boucher back on.
"Okay, that was weird. Jessica, weird feelings are getting weirder, but we don't have any sign of them."
Jason didn't reply. Cass frowned.
"Jason?"
Dick asked cautiously. They exchanged looks.
"Tim, Steph, Damien, is anyone there?"
Dick demanded, agitation spiking higher once more.
"Darkstar, do you read me?"
Cass yanked the trapdoor open and dropped through it, Dick hot on her heels as they pounded down the stairs.
"Switching to open comms,"
Dick told her, fiddling with his vambrace. A moment later, his voice came through her comm again, on the general frequency that's broadcast to anyone in the immediate vicinity of the planet. It was risky, given that they didn't know who else might be in range, but they needed to know what happened to the ship and their siblings.
"Darkstar,"
Dick said.
"Come in. Can you read me? Darkstar, this is Gital. What is your location?" "Dick?"
An unexpected voice demanded through the comm. Cass almost fell down the stairs, catching herself on a wall sconce.
"Bruce,"
Dick breathed, his hum leaping in excitement, before the underlying vibration of fear took over, turning into anger.
"Where the cark have you been? Why haven't you been responding? Why haven't you been responding?"
Bruce demanded right back.
"We've been trying to contact you." "What? We haven't received any signals." "Are you in orbit?"
Bruce asked.
"I can give you our coordinates."
"Lost Darkstar," Cass interrupted, abruptly remembering that they've been trying to contact Jason, not Bruce.
"Did someone take it?"
Din asked, and Cass let a little more tension drain away, knowing he was alive too.
"We told Jason to take it into orbit while the two of us look for you,"
Dick said.
"We were in constant contact until 2 minutes ago when they stopped responding." "Those were not your orders,"
Bruce snapped.
"We found you, didn't we?"
Dick snapped back, anger spiking higher. "Stop," Cass said firmly. "Scared. Frustrated. Not at each other. Work together." There was a slight pause.
"You're right, Cass,"
Bruce said quietly.
"Ne paravous, takisit."
Dick blew out a long breath, shoulders slumping and the anger draining from his hum.
"Yeah, me too,"
he said.
"Where are you? We're heading down the temple spire now." "How did you get past us?"
Din asked.
"We're right at the tree line."
"Didn't feel you," Cass said, troubled. She could almost always feel any living beings near her, especially if they were people she knew and cared about.
"We'll meet you there,"
Dick said.
"I'd like to be as far from this temple as possible."
Sure enough, Din, Bruce, and Grogu were waiting for them at the tree line. Bruce grabbed them both in a tight hug, crushing them to his cuirass.
"Oh, thanks, Amanda,"
he muttered. Cass pressed her forehead to his chest and let his familiar hum wash over her, higher notes of happiness blending with anxiety around the center that was just Bruce. Then he pulled back, his helmet tilted in disapproval.
You left your Vodokase behind? Jason's with them,
Dick defended.
Safe, in orbit? Weird feeling,
Cass interrupted before they could start arguing again.
Up there,
she pointed at the spire.
Yeah,
Dick said, thankfully focusing on the problem. He explained the weird feelings they'd both been having, while Din and Bruce listened thoughtfully, trying to work the feelings into their own experiences.
Any trigger?
Din asked. Dick's helmet tilted in a frown.
Not that I know of. Door,
Cass said, remembering.
You closed, then feeling. So the trapdoor could have been the trigger,
Din mused.
Actually, now that I think about it, Grogu reacted in that room, too. He seemed happier than he had been and made some noise, even though he'd been completely silent through the rest of the search. I thought he was just hungry.
Din's hum twisted in self-recrimination, and Cass patted him on the arm.
Not your fault,
she said. She looked back at Dick. You were happier, too, she signed, before opening the door. I was worried.
A trap?
Bruce asked.
Meant to lure people in with those happy feelings. You and I didn't feel anything,
Din pointed out. Cass shook her head when they looked at her.
Not happy. Small feeling when gone.
They all looked at each other uncertainly for a moment. Finally, Dick spoke up.
Whether it was a trap or not is irrelevant right now,
Dick said.
The point is that it did something, and we need to figure out what and how to get back to the rest of our elite.
If Jason's smart, he'll be leaving the system and finding somewhere to lay low,
Bruce muttered. Dick's helmet tilted wryly.
I guess we'll be seeing him soon, then.
What are you doing? Tim demanded, bursting into the cockpit. Jason barely spared him a glance, keying in coordinates for their hyperspace jump.
Getting away from this Manda-forsaken planet.
But they're still down there, Tim yelled.
Dick and Cass lost contact 2 hours ago, Jason gritted, keeping his gaze locked on the controls.
If he looked back, he wasn't sure he'd be strong enough to finish the jump.
Bruce and Din have been missing for 4. Clearly, this is a larger threat than we expected.
You can't just abandon them, Tim yelled, lunging for the controls. Jason spun his chair and grabbed him, dragging him away.
I'm not risking you, he panted, grunting as Tim kneed him in the side.
He'd removed his armor once they were in orbit, which meant he'd have a lovely bruise in a few hours. We have to go back. Tim yelled, clawing his way out of Jason's grip.
Slippery Osaka.
Jason tackled him, pinning his limbs.
We have to think smart, he snarled back. You think I want to leave them there? Kark, no. But it's my job to take care of you.
And wasn't that a sad day, when Jason was the last one left to look after the kids?
What is going on?
Damien demanded from the door. Steph hovered behind him. Jason shoved down a bolt of panic at the sight of them, the reminder that, oh yeah, he had to keep them alive too, and glowered up at them, still keeping Tim pinned to the floor.
Him's a decoot who wants to go racing back planetside even though Bruce and Din and Dick and Cass have all gone missing, and they're all much better fighters than him. He glowered at Tim pointedly.
He wants to leave. He was prepping the hyperdrive, Tim yelled, squirming pointlessly.
Yeah, as is protocol for these situations.
Jason leaned a little more weight on Tim's chest, forcing him to break off and gasp for air. Bruce would know how to handle this better, in a way that didn't involve slightly suffocating his brother in hopes for a moment of quiet to think. But Bruce wasn't here, and the gasping wasn't helping Jason focus.
Tim was a stubborn Osaka. And he dragged in enough breath to wheeze.
You didn't care about protocol when you wanted to explore the planet.
The words hit like a punch to the gut. And maybe I should have. Jason resisted the urge to bash Tim's head on the floor. He wasn't angry at his vodka, not really. Maybe if I'd followed protocol, none of this would have happened. That was a bit too honest for comfort, but it got Tim to finally go limp in his arms, so Jason was taking what he could get. You can't know that, Jessica, Steph said softly, sliding down the wall to sit cross-legged on the floor. They went out into the jungle, no matter what we did.
You can't possibly think we're going to leave them behind,
Damien said, hands on his hips. Jason could imagine his imperious expression under the training helmet he was obsessed with wearing. Not that Jason couldn't relate, he'd refused to take off his first helmet for weeks, but it had been two standard cycles for the Kraa's sake. Bruce should probably figure out what neurosis was driving that. Or, Jason swallowed hard, maybe that'd be on him now if Bruce didn't come back. It's my job to keep you guys safe, Jason said, fighting to keep his voice calm. And that means getting you out of the danger zone. And if that means leaving them behind, he took a deep breath. So be it.
No,
Damien said decisively. He marched over to the controls. Whoa, Jason jumped off Tim. What are you? Ugh. He went down hard as Tim took out his legs. Tim struggled to hold Jason's legs down. Jason sat up and started prying his fingers off one at a time. Damien, I swear to the Manda, don't you dare. Tim gave up on holding him down and wound himself bodily around Jason's legs instead, like a damn Vexus. That couldn't be comfortable. It certainly wasn't for Jason, with Tim's armor digging into him. Steph, get his arms, he panted. A weight hit Jason's back a second later as Steph tried to pull his arms behind his body. What is this, a Karging mutiny? Jason demanded.
We shall not flee,
Damien decreed, quickly shutting down the hyperdrive and prepping the landing protocol.
We are Mando Ade, not Hutene.
Nu Hutenla, Basla, Shavla, Jason hissed, shoving Steph off him. She rolled to her feet, but Jason was already yanking Tim off his legs. He was done with this. He got one leg free and stood up, dragging Tim along as he headed for the controls. Damien hit the buttons faster, helmet flicking up to monitor his approach, his shoulders slanted with just a hint of nerves. Good. Jason was going to lock the lot of them in the containment cell. Or maybe he just carbonite freeze them. Quieter, that way. He had just reached out to grab Damien's arm when Steph hit him with a flying tackle. With him still clinging to his leg, it was too much for Jason to keep his balance. He hit the ground for a second time in as many minutes and, oh yeah, he was carbonite freezing them. Absolutely. Damien decisively flicked a switch and then dropped onto Jason's chest, his bony knees knocking all the air from Jason's lungs. What the cart? He wheezed. Get off of me. Not until you promise to help save our elite, Tim yelled from his legs. If we go together, it'll be safer, Steph pointed out. She'd taken advantage of Damien's attack to get Jason's arms in a firm pin. Otherwise, we'll just lock you in the containment cell and go ourselves. Jason stared up at her with his best death glare. Sure, he said, not even trying to sound sincere. He did not need this right now. This would be hard enough if the kids weren't fighting him. We'll all go together. Now let me up. Damien snorted and knelt higher to peer at Jason's face, which meant his knees were grinding against Jason's ribs and ow.
We are not Dekutla, Jason. If we let you up, you will merely take control of the ship again.
How could you accuse me of that? Jason asked, giving him a dangerous smile. He'd absolutely take control of the ship, which he could feel dropping towards the planet's surface, and he wouldn't be nice about it. His job was to keep his Vodikase alive. That didn't mean they couldn't have a few bruises. You can trust me. Swear, Tim called. Hu Ija Ha'it. Jason considered that. The oath was a serious one, and one he wouldn't feel comfortable breaking. Tim had thought this through. Alternatively, he said, I could just wait until you guys get tired of holding me down, and then take control back of the ship. He sent that same dangerous smile towards Steph. After all, I'm just lying here. You guys are the one doing all the work. They exchange looks over his head.
There, that's the last room,
Jason said, glaring around the tiny room as Steph clambered up behind the rest of them.
Are you happy now?
He wasn't. It was a dirty trick they'd pulled, forcing him to swear, and he'd been getting steadily more irritated as time passed. The fact that nothing had happened wasn't helping. It just made him more sure that there was a shoe waiting to drop around every corner.
Din mentioned tunnels,
Tim said thoughtfully, walking around the room and peering through one of the four windows.
No,
Jason said immediately. Why was he stuck being the responsible one in this situation? It was unnatural, and he'd like to file a complaint.
If there's some deadly creature hiding somewhere on this planet, the abandoned tunnels are where it'd be. We are not doing that. You swore. I swore to search the temple,
Jason snapped back.
I didn't say anything about tunnels.
Tim sent him such a glare that he almost tripped over Damien, who was staring morosely out his own window. Jason would feel bad for the kid later, once his irritation drained away and it actually set in that they hadn't found a hint of their elite and they were all falling apart over it. But for now, Jason was just as pissed at Damien as his other Vodokase.
Move, Timothy,
Damien snapped, shoving Tim. Tim staggered back and hit the trapdoor. The world seemed to slow as the trapdoor fell. They'd been so harking careful not to close any doors because they didn't know if the JT had some sort of magic locking system. And now, here, in the very last room, Tim and Damien cark it up with their perpetual arguing that they only put on hold to take Jason down. It'd be ironic if Jason wasn't seeing the rest of their lives pass before his eyes. They'd be locked in this tiny room forever from some JT magic bantha shit. Their only choice would be to shove Damien through one of the tiny windows with a grapple and hope he could find a ladder or stool somewhere so he could reach the trapdoor and try to open it from the outside. If that didn't work, then they'd really be screwed. Jason might just shove Tim and Steph out there too without grapples. He was sure he could make them fit if he really tried. Then he'd at least have peace and quiet while he starved to death. Steph pulled open the trapdoor. Ah, okay. Jason could admit he may have been a bit dramatic. Sue him. His elite was missing, and now he and his Vodokase were in the same place they'd gone missing. He was allowed to be concerned.
Steph,
Dick's voice said from the hole in the floor.
Dick?
They all yelled. Jason lunged over to the trapdoor, nearly bonking helmets with his Vodokase as they all crammed around the trapdoor. Sure enough, Dick was standing below. And he wasn't alone. Bruce stepped into view, shoulders sagging with visible relief. Jason's breath whooshed out of him and he slumped over, pressing his forehead to his drawn-up knee. There was a lot of clamor for a while, but Jason let it flow past him, just focusing on breathing. Now that the reason for his anxiety was gone, it was all crashing into him at once, overpowering the anger it had been hiding behind. What if he hadn't followed his Vodokase's bullying? Would they have been in another system by the time Bruce and Dick called for pickup? Where had they been? He didn't have to raise the kids by himself. Thank the Manda. He started upright when someone touched his back.
Are you okay, Jason?
Din asked quietly. Oh, good. He was here too. Jason sucked in a ragged breath and nodded.
I'm fine,
he rasped.
Just relieved that we found you.
Din clasped his arm comfortingly. He hauled Jason to his feet and right into a hug, pressing their foreheads together. Jason blinked, startled. Din was more of a verbal affection and brief touches guy with anyone other than Grogu. He must have been just as shaken up as Jason by this whole mess. Jason let out a long breath, letting the anxiety drain from him and sagging against his Babadoo.
Vorey,
he murmured.
Niantia,
Din said, giving him a final pat on the back before pulling away.
Mavar Tigar, Jessica?
Bruce asked through the trapdoor.
Nas,
Jason said, jumping down. This time it was Bruce pulling him into a hug, and Jason went just as willingly.
Let's not do that again,
he said.
I don't think I'd survive having to take care of these Osakase by myself. I'm glad you're okay,
Bruce said, even as he ran his hands down Jason's arms looking for hidden injuries. He sighed in relief when he didn't find any and pulled Jason in for another tighter hug.
But speaking of taking care of your siblings,
he gave them all a look.
You're all grounded for not following protocol and for putting yourselves in danger. Oh, hell no,
Jason pulled away from Bruce, but he was drowned out by Dick's indignant squawk.
Excuse me,
Dick demanded.
I'm too old for you to ground. Maybe as your buir,
Bruce allowed. His helmet tilt was smug.
But not as your allure.
Dick sputtered furiously. Din chuckled.
He's got you there, Vodka. That's...
Dick gave up, throwing his arms in the air.
I am not taking the fall for this,
Jason said hotly.
I tried to follow protocol. I had programmed the hyperdrive. And yet you're here,
Dick drawled, arms folded moodily. Jason put his hands on his hips and sent a vicious glare towards Steph, Tim, and Damien. They'd already broken sibling code, and he wasn't about to help them.
Go on,
he said.
Tell him what you did.
Damien solidified his stance, raising his chin rebelliously, but Tim and Steph visibly cringed. Clearly, they didn't consider what would happen if they actually found their elite. Tim reached up to rub the back of his neck, but was foiled by his armor. He dropped his arm and shrugged a little.
We pinned him down and forced him to swear an oath to come planetside and help us look for you. Hoot Ija Ha'i,
Jason stressed. The rest of their elite looked between the kids, who are at least a head shorter than Jason, to Jason.
I've seen you take the three of them down in training,
Din pointed out skeptically. Jason glared at Steph. She gave an awkward wave.
That's on me. I kinda... Who the cark thought it was a good idea to give Blondie lilac venom?
Jason demanded, cutting her off. The others stiffened.
You threatened to poison your brother?
Bruce asked in a low, dangerous voice.
It wouldn't have killed him,
Steph protested.
Just caused a lot of pain and, maybe knocked him out?
Her voice weakened as she spoke, shoulders hunching. Bruce stared at her for a long moment.
You threatened to poison your brother,
he repeated,
forcing him to put himself and all of you in danger.
He turned his glare on Tim and Damien.
And you helped her. This is not the way,
Din said severely. While the two of them tore the Osakase to shreds, Jason sat down and leaned against the wall. His heart was still pounding. Cass sat beside him and handed him Grogu, which was nice. Grogu burbled and patted Jason's boucher.
Hey, buddy,
Jason said, smiling.
I'm glad you're okay. Chef gone,
Cass told him quietly.
JT Osik. Seriously?
Jason groaned.
We've been resweeping the temple for hours trying to figure out what happened and why.
Dick agreed, sitting on his other side.
How long were you up in that room? 2 minutes,
Jason said, frowning.
You couldn't have gotten past us,
Dick said.
We've been on this level for almost half an hour, we think.
He hesitated and tilted his head back and forth.
Bruce thinks time might move differently in this temple, and Din's not disagreeing with him. But that doesn't explain it,
Jason pointed out. Grogu wiggled, so he picked up the odd under his arms and helped him stand on his thighs. Grogu bounced happily.
Because when we entered the temple, we would have joined the same time flow. Yeah.
Dick sighed.
And none of us aged noticeably or anything. Has it only been about 5 hours since Din and Bruce went missing? Yeah. I don't know then,
Dick said, tilting his head against the wall.
But the jungle showed no sign of a ship being present. Our chronos all broke. We couldn't reach you once we closed the trapdoor and set off the magic. The trapdoor did it. Seriously?
Maybe it was a good thing Damien and Tim had been fighting.
Yeah. Cass could feel it a little, but I...
Dick sucked in the breath.
I could feel it a lot. Something big changed, but I don't know what. Oh, sick.
Jason muttered.
Town, too.
Cass added.
What? Oh, yeah.
Dick reached out and held Grogu's hand with one finger.
Din and Bruce scanned for life forms, and there's something that looks like a town on the other side of the planet. But the planet was empty.
Jason said blankly.
Yeah. Another reason they think something happened with time. Tank Ferrick, are we in the future?
Jason demanded. Dick's sigh rasped through his vocoder.
Maybe. We haven't actually gone into the town yet. We were trying to find the source of our feelings to find a way back. Well?
Jason said slowly.
At least we have a lead. And maybe ship off planet?
Cass agreed. The good news was, there was a ship off planet. A rare occurrence, apparently, so they were particularly lucky. The bad news was...
You don't take credit?
Din asked, just a hint of desperation leaking through his vocoder. It had been a long day, and it only seemed to be getting longer. The captain of the ship snorted rudely. Not those. I don't know what kind of local currency this is, but I don't have the time or inclination to work out the conversion rate. I'll take the flan, wupiopi, or drugat, though. Local currency? These were New Republic credits. Imperial credits might still have been floating around the Outer Rim, but the New Republic had been in power for almost a decade. How could he not recognize them? Bruce's theory was beginning to make more and more sense. Din allowed himself to blow out a slow, anxious breath, knowing it would sound frustrated through his vocoder. The captain shifted his weight. Look, best I could do was pay you its weight in metals, and that's me being generous.
When do you leave?
Din asked. 2 hours, the captain said, narrowing his eyes. Din nodded.
I'll be back.
He turned on his heel and strode away, his cape whipping behind him. His elite were waiting near the massive well in the center of town, all of them too wary of this planet to hide on the outskirts like they usually would. They all straightened when he came near, Damien scrambling to his feet from where he'd been watching a lizard, and Steph sliding off the rim of the fountain. Din folded his arms, eyeing the younger Ade for a moment. There was no point withholding the information from them. They'd find out soon enough, and maybe they'd come up with something helpful. The captain didn't recognize New Republic credit, he reported tersely, using their internal comms. No use giving away to any listening ears. He thought it was local currency he'd never seen. He's willing to accept it by weight only. The kids reacted in varying levels of concern, but Din kept his eyes on Bruce, who was visibly taking a deep breath.
Options?
He asked after a moment. He'll take flan, wupiopi, or drugat. The one thing in our favor is that it seems they're worth more here. Whether here meant location or time, he didn't know, and no one asked. Bruce nodded slowly.
But we still don't have much of those currencies,
he said slowly. Exactly, Din said grimly. Let's see what we do have, though. They all dug in their bags and belts, pulling out the scarce non-credit money they had. Din felt a bit bad taking the Ade's money from them. They all worked hard to earn their cuts of the bounties, but needs must. Dick had a couple pieces of flan. Cass added a single drugat, tilting her head apologetically, and Jason tossed in some wupiopi. The younger Ade only had credits. Din counted up the money they'd accumulated. If the captain would agree to give a discount on Damien because of his age, and if they hid Grogu in his bag, Din grimaced at the thought, but it was better than giving their credits away by weight. Still, if it came down to it, he'd do it. They had no idea what was going on, and they weren't going to find answers on a scug hole that barely had a functioning spaceport. And there was no way in hell he was leaving any of his elite behind, not after what happened.
"We'll help Grogu sleep,"
Cass told him. Cass was the best at getting Grogu to sleep long and deep, and Din nodded. "Just wait until we're about to board." He glanced at his chrono. Thankfully, the JT magic had just reset the chronos, and a shopkeeper was able to tell them the time. The dark slots remained empty. It would be too suspicious to ask, and their armor drew enough attention. "The ship leaves in an hour and a half. We can't be late." Everyone nodded. "See if any of the shopkeepers will accept credits," Din added as he went on to barter with the captain. "We should stock up on supplies." They each had their emergency rations, but he'd rather save those for a real emergency. The captain grudgingly agreed to take them all on board without requiring extra credit, and soon they were all tucked in the ship's hold, on their way to Navarro and hopefully some answers. The end. Author's note. Since they didn't have access to Jedi to explain the planet's weirdness, allow me to explain. The planet's strong in the Force, which is why they built a temple there. So that's what's keeping the plants alive and stuff in Mando's time. They live on the Force, not water or nutrients in the soil. The fruit withered after being picked because it was cut off from the Force and isolated in the ship. The end for real this time.